good to be back. Hi, everyone. Hope you're doing well today. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Henrik, and you can find more of what we do at RedEyeSecretions.com and RedEyesMembers.com. Today, we have an interesting show for you lined up here. I don't know how much you've heard or know about the Dacians or the Thracians, and they're also known as the Getae. This is a story about the stolen history of Romania. We're talking with Octavian Grindian today. He's from Romania, but he's currently living in Sweden. And we're going to talk more about a field known as Dacology. We had a couple of documentaries up on the website about this, about the Thracians, about the mystery of the Thracians a while back. But today we're going to go a little bit deeper into the backdrop to the story and to talk about what has happened to them. This is a story of yet another European tribe that has been covered up on a monumental scale, but in the last few years, more and more and more people have actually started researching into the Dacians or the Thracians and found some tremendous material that now is becoming more widely known. It's a huge story, and there's a lot of different components to it, but this program will serve as an introduction to this very interesting topic, so stay with us, much more to come. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Octavian. Thank you so much for being here with us. Very good to have you with us on the program. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing well. Good to see you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. It's really really interesting. We've done a lot of pre-talks, obviously, you and me. We've talked a lot about the material that we're going to get into here today. It's a very fascinating story of the stolen history of Romania, getting into the Thracians, the Getae, the Dacii. It's a very fascinating story. Tell us just a little bit here in the beginning, Octavian. What led you to this story and what got you started on all the things we'll be talking about today?
Well, there are many things that really got me into this story, but I will have to tell you my story, where I come from. And I come from Romania. I was born there. I came to Sweden when I was 13, in late August of 89. And I have been always interested in the subject of my own history, but the versions of history that we had during the communist time was pretty strange, even to me at that time. I didn't really understand it, why they would make such a story, and I didn't understand the story itself, and I would tell you in a second about it. The original version of the story of our descendants, it was pretty much very short. They would not get into any dates before the Daco-Roman Wars of Trajan. It's like the whole Dacian civilization started with the Trajan and Decebal's War. So it was pretty much the story that we have been Romanized by the Romans, that somehow all the Dacians have totally disappeared from history. That is the basic official version. But at the same time, when I was young in Romania, I heard another version, like the version, the popular version, if I can call it like that, the version that I would hear on the street. And that version was really strange, because they were saying, like, because Trajan could not conquer Decebal, he released all the criminals from all the Roman Empire, and he gave them an ultimatum that if they would win Dacia, they would be able to stay there and live there. And if not, if they would come back, they would be executed, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when I heard that story, the popular version of this, that's what really got me very suspicious. Because the story itself would make you ask the question, like, what was so special about the Dacians? Why would Trajan do this? I mean, is that a common thing that they would do in that time, to release all the prisoners just to conquer one country? It just didn't sound right, even for that point in time. Then the time went on, and I came to Sweden when I was 13, like I said. And I guess I always wanted to know more about the difference between the East and West.
Yeah.
I felt, in a sense, that there was some kind of cultural shock for me to come, because pretty much in the last year in Romania, I guess you could say I was I was free. I was without my parents, you know, like caving in home alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just with my grandmother, and my grandmother was really good and she really trusted me. So I would get to do whatever I wanted to. And that year, during the Ceaușescu time, you know, it was, the school was very different. It was very, it was a discipline, harsh discipline, mm-hmm. if I can put it like that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
But for me, knowing that I would come here, I guess I became a little rebel in school, and I started to ask questions and all those type of things. So after that year of many events, when I came to Sweden, it was a shock to me, because I didn't see the children playing outside as much as in Romania, you know. And it was a shock, that, and I always wanted to know. And then probably later on, after school, I guess I wanted to see the world more, to understand more what's behind the world. So I took a job as a bartender, and I started to work as a bartender, traveling around the world working. And around 2004, the late 2003, I decided I would have to find out what is going on in this world. There were so many things that didn't add up. What was going on in the news, what Hollywood was showing us in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There was just like stuff constantly repeat themselves. And I could see the pattern even in the Hollywood movies for a long time, but of course I ignored it. And then in 2004, I made a conscious decision to, I would find out exactly what is going on. And then for about 3 years, I constantly research all types of information on many different subjects of history, religion, alternative information. And of course, after a few years, I came to the ancestor story. I got connected with that somehow.
You wanted to maybe learn more about your roots, because partially you felt displaced in Sweden, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I always wanted to know my roots, even before. But there was not that much research, if I remember correctly, in 2004, for example, when I started this, there was not enough research in Romania about history. There was some, but maybe I didn't know how to look for it. That's changed with the years. I mean, in 2008, of course, there was more than 2004. And in 2010, 11, it's changed completely. I mean, there's so much more blogs and information now than there's ever been.
So this topic has just kind of exploded, really, in the last few years, of both of the Thracians, of the Dacians, of the Getae, of the Goths, yeah,
absolutely.
All of this.
Yes, absolutely. In 2012, with those movies that you saw a while back, Decoding Dacia, and Unsettling Truths, and Thracian Hidden Mystery. That's you have seen them, right?
Yeah, definitely. We have them on the website. We'll link to those so people can take a look at that. But yeah, so those kind of opened up a lot for a lot of researchers and scholars.
Absolutely. There were actually three movies came out in 2012 at the same time, mm-hmm. at the same festival. There was Decoding Dacia, Unsettling Truth, and another movie called Draco, Stone Faces. That's also a really cool movie.
Yeah.
And what was also cool, that all these three directors didn't know about each other. Didn't know they were doing movies about the Dacian at the same time, all three of them.
Right.
So that was a cool event. And I guess in 2013, I got back into this research a little more, and I started to look into the story of the Dacians and all the research that has been coming up. In the last 25 years, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the research is amazing. I mean, so complex. And it's very hard to explain how advanced the research has become. And I mean, there's constant new information coming out. There are a lot of researchers into this. I mean, there's at least 100 associations around the world that promote this subject of the Dutch and of our ancestors, which is amazing. Amazing that so many people are involved into this.
Yeah.
And of course, some people are not taking this as serious because they don't have that concept of history. They do not understand. And to be honest, I didn't understand it either. When I was younger, I didn't understand, not even the tradition, not even that part, how important it is to have those type of roots, to have something to hold on to when the world is changing around you.
Exactly.
So history is, in my opinion, one of the most important thing we have, because we have to understand who we are. I mean, we have to try at least. I mean, because whatever version they have given us, it seems it's not working, because we are pretty lost as a civilization, and that is for entire Europe, not just Eastern Europe or Western Europe. It's all over. It's the same.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
There's same problems.
Exactly. So what if we kind of look at some of the big picture here? Let's say we have some listeners who, you know nothing about this. There's many different names to talk about the people we're talking about. They've been named by, of course, different people around the time. We do have the problem of a lot of the things that have been written has been written by not only the Romans, but those who seeking to, you know, to conquer these people. But what do you think we should know if we know nothing about the Dacians, the Thracians, the Getae? What should people know?
Well, people should know first one very important information that comes from a Greek writer, I don't know if it's Herodot or Homer, that is placing the Thracians as the largest numbers of people after the Indians. And this statement really clears all the confusion of who was living in Europe, because there is no other quote like that about other civilization in Europe in 500 BC, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Thracians were the majority of those tribes in Europe, and some people say there are more up to 200 tribes. You can find at least 100 of them on the web, but there are more tribes, like smaller tribes that have not been mentioned by others. And then we have to go back to the names, because these people were all living pretty close to each other, and yet they had so many different names. And this is where the story gets confusing for many people, because we have so many tribes. We have the Sinten, we have the Dacians, we have the Getodacians. The way, you see this Getodacian thing, the Greeks called them Geti, and the Romans called them Daci. But what were their names? This is what is so strange about the story, because how can you track down the names of these people, which is the easiest way to track down a name in history? And it's not very easy, but you still have to go to more sources than just the Roman sources. You have to go really back in time, and you have to be looking for that too, to know that it's there, you know.
Do they have any written language of their own, as we know?
They must have had, but they were not using the language to write, on example, on paper or on written stuff. That the only writings that have been found from them were written on stone, not on paper.
Let me ask you a little bit about, you know, what set the stage for these people, how they kind of show up in history, because we have two important kings. We have Burbista and we have Dutch Bolt. They're living fairly close to each other as far as I've been able to figure out.
Yes.
And
yes,
then that's obviously when the Romans come onto the stage of trying to conquer the people. Tell us a bit about these two kings that kind of set the backdrop for these people.
Absolutely. I can about Burbista. Burbista was probably the only Thracian king that united the largest part of the Thracian during that time. And I guess he lived during the same period as Caesar. And of course, during that time, there was already some kind of pressure against them. They somehow knew that they were going to be attacked by the Romans, I think, even before that. And of course, a lot of people are debating the reason why they were attacked in the first place. Because Burebista and Caesar die in the same year. And some researchers are saying that Caesar was taken out because he wanted to attack Dacia. If he would have attacked Dacia during that time, it would have been a pretty interesting thing, because that's probably the time when this kingdom was at its largest stage, the Dacian kingdom.
Before we continue on that, tell us just the geography here, because we have, you know, Romania is a fairly large country today. We have Moldova to the east, they're right there at the Black Sea. We have Bulgaria underneath, Serbia,
Bulgaria
Hungary.
On the south, yeah. So Serbia, Hungary on the west, and to the north to Ukraine.
Was it this whole area? How big do you think the kingdom or where the Dutchian people were? How big of an area?
It was pretty large. We have maps. I can give you links of Burebista so the listeners can see. It was stretching all the way from behind Ukraine all the way to south of Danube, pretty down south to south of Poland, all the way around the Carpathian Mountain, all the way to the stretches of the Carpathian Mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was pretty large.
And fairly good down to the south as well. Do you know if it included like Bulgaria, Macedonia?
Yes, I it wasn't all the way down to the Adriatic Sea or all the way down to Croatia, but it was pretty close to it.
Yeah.
So it was pretty a large kingdom. And of course, Caesar was killed because of that, because that would have meant the destruction of the Roman Empire, in a sense, that would have lost a lot of sources during that war. Another thing that can be said about Burebista is that he descends from the tribe of Buri, which was, I think it was from North Africa, which also showed that the Thracian tribes were pretty far down.
Yeah.
And there were other leaders even before Burebista. We have Dromihete, and we have, of course, the Massa Jataya queen Tomiris, which created the city of Tomis on the Black Sea. And probably the story of Tomiris is very amazing, and it's very weird that they have not told us about Tomiris when you have all the countries, all our neighboring countries, venerating Tomiris. Not our neighboring country immediately, but the country further to the east, Armenia, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, and they have the legend of Tomiris over there. And Tomiris was a pretty amazing personality for that time. She's the one that conquered Cyrus the Great. Her story is pretty amazing. And the painting of Tomiris that you see on those links, it's very famous. A lot of artists have tried to create an artistic depiction of that moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's very interesting that they didn't talk a lot about Burebista either in our original history. The original version of history, they did not mention anything about that. And Another thing I would like to make clear about this Dark or Roman War is that they were constantly trying to tell us that somehow the Romans came here, attacked Dacia, and they have Romanized us by mixing with the Dacian women.
Right.
But in a sense, when you take a look at the map of Dacia during the time of Decebal, you can see that they only occupied a very small part of Dacia. They only came up to Roșia Montană, the controversial place of Roșia Montană.
Yeah, we want to talk more about that later, for sure.
That's how far they wanted to go, because they were looking for the treasure, they were looking for the legend, they were looking for probably the popular version of things that we don't know about, that people were talking about around that time.
Yeah, right.
Because it was more than just about the gold. The gold was one of the things, but it really comes out from the artifacts and the things that I've discovered that it was about technology. It was about technology of the melting the metals, and there's a lot of legends about different artifacts and different things, exactly like probably the Norse mythology, the Hammer of Thor. We
right.
have those type of things too that come from Romania.
Is there any reason, do you think, why they, because the wars is an interesting moment if we pause on that a little bit, because we have Trajan, you know, he's building this huge commemorative pillar to the Dacians afterwards, called Trajan's Pillar. Tell us a little bit about that. What do you think happened during these wars, and why the Romans were so, you know, fascinated and immersed with the Dacian?
This is where the story doesn't fit in, you know, because our historians are teaching us that we have been Romanized, and then we go in Rome and we see the Romans having a pretty large number of statues of the Dacians. And it doesn't make any sense, because they do not have statues of the barbarians like that. They were not worshipping the barbarians. That is not what we know in history anyway. So it's a very strange depiction to see them there, to see how proud they stand and look down at the Romans. If you take the statues, for example, like the Ark of Constantine, to see those tall Dacians standing on the top of Ark of Constantine, just their expression, it's pretty amazing, because they do not look like they have lost. And Ark of Constantine was built in a 3rd century, so
it's some 100 years after they've said to conquer them, right? So what do you think is this? What is the meaning of that? Why do they show up in that way on the arch?
Well, the arch is like a video depiction of the war, of the Roman Dacian war, the wars of Trajan and Decebal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like a video version, a video clip of today, if I can put it like that.
Right. It's a commemorative thing, a historical document for people to look at.
A visual historical document.
Yeah.
And during that time, we have to realize that thing was painted in life colors. Some writers even say that you could see the eyes of the warriors from standing down. And it was a pretty tall, it is a pretty tall column. It's 30 centimeters.
Yeah.
And with a diameter of 3.5 meters, I think. It's an amazing work of art. There is no other type of, column for the barbarians in the Roman Empire or anywhere else where they have been standing. Not for the barbarians.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we take the name of barbarians, it doesn't have to mean what it means today.
Of course not. No, no.
And that's what we have to take in consideration with all types of words. That they didn't mean back then what they mean now. And the barbarian name, for example, I mean, in the Greek language, I think it means a bearded man, like a man with a long beard, you know.
Yeah.
And they were called, barbarians were called, even the Orthodox priests. But they were not called because they were barbarian. They were referring just to their beard. Even in Romanian, barbos is bearded man. So I guess the words have been twisted. So they will lose their meaning in a sense. That's what really comes out of lot of many things in this research.
Right. Yeah.
And what is also interesting that the Romans stayed in Dacia for only 160 years. And this in this 160 years, they were able to Romanize all the Dacians, even the one behind the, I mean, above the mountains that they were not controlling, even the free Dacians, the way they are called. They were able somehow to Romanize them, which it's a totally ridiculous claim because the Romans, I mean, the Roman soldiers did not speak Latin, first and forward. First and forward, all the Roman soldiers were speaking old Latin or
vulgar Latin.
It's called vulgar Latin or popular Latin, or some call it the idiot's language.
Right.
when they created the other type of Latin. And if you knew the barbarian language, you could not understand the Latin language, the academic version, because that would the Latin language that we know today is the academic version of it. It's not really similar to the barbarian language, the Vulgare Latina. It cannot be because it's too complex, and which also shows that the Roman Empire spoke the barbarian language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is also depicted in writings of the ancients, that they were speaking the barbarian language. And the Roman Empire has stayed in other places in the world for much longer than they have in Dacia. You know, like the Maltese were occupied by the Romans for almost 1100 years. The Greeks were under Roman occupation for 640 years. And the Egyptian like 425 years, the Hebrews 325 years, mm-hmm. and the Britons 450 years. In none of those places I just mentioned, anybody speaks Latin.
Right. Yeah.
Only here, only in Romania, we have learned the Latin language. That's what they're trying to tell us, which is totally ridiculous.
How do you interpret that? What does that mean? What happened?
Well, first and foremost, it goes back to the linguistic. The Latin language is not the origin of the Latin languages of today. Because they could not be, because then we all be speaking some type of Latin today. And the classic Latin is not similar to, I mean, of course you might understand some words of Italian, Spanish, and Romanian if you would learn classical Latin. But it will not help you to talk. And that's what, if you have an original language that has somehow created all these languages, there has to be more traces in the languages. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And the only language in Europe that really has that, it's our Romanian language.
Mm-hmm.
The complexity, the number of the words, the number of short words, the number of words that are not used anymore, the number of proverbs, the number of quotes. We have the largest collection of all those type of things, which also goes back to the language. And at the same time, we have the Geto-Dacian language, or the archaic Romanian language, archaic Geto-Dacian language, that is spoken in many countries in Europe. It's like the descendants. Some people call them the Vlachi, like Vlachi, they were called even during the Turkish occupation. And even before that, there were only two names used for Romania. There were Dacia or Valachia. Only these two names up to 18th century.
Mm-hmm, right.
And in that time, they wanted to give us that name of Dacia, but they didn't want to give it. They wanted actually to split up Dacia in two sides, Dacia of the east and I think Dacia of the west. And two kings, of course. But at the end, we got Romania, which means New Rome. And it's a total dedication to the Roman Empire. It's a veneration of the Roman Empire.
So Romania, as we know it today, just to clarify that, it's a very recent invention and has nothing to do with historical anchoring, right?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just an invention that is trying somehow to erase the past by calling us Romanians.
Yeah.
Because Romanians means New Rome.
Yeah.
But even if you have New Rome, you would still need the Roman people. Because this is the question, even when I was young, I always wonder why we are called Romania. I mean, I was asking myself, did all the Romans move to Romania?
Right.
Did all the Romans from the Roman Empire move to Romania and Italy was empty? Why is that place called Italy? I mean, they have the capital Rome. I mean, if they were called Romania, they should have the capital of Rome.
Right.
You know what I said?
Of course.
That's how I saw it. And I didn't know that much about history when I was seeing those things.
It's a way to put the lid on something, a very ancient, interesting past, a history where we not only have conflict with the Roman Empire, but there's something more to it than that. Yeah.
Yes, because in the 17th century, there was this dacological current that really started, and they were somehow split up. It was like the Roman camp and the Dacian camp when it comes to historians and archaeologists. And that story has been going on the last 300 years, in a sense, more or less. I mean, a lot of, even Mihai Eminescu was our famous national poet, you can call it a national hero too. He was promoting the changing of the name into Dacia and to actually make everything like in the Dacian time. And the powers that be at that time really got obsessed with Eminescu. Eminescu was a journalist and an amazing poet too. He was taken down in a very cruel way. He died in an insane asylum poisoned slowly by mercury.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And even our other leaders have been somehow connected with the Dacian past. If you take, for example, Mihai the Great, our great unifier of the Romanian lands in the 16th century, he was called Malus Dacus by the Hungarian, the evil Dacian.
Right, yeah.
So we have a lot of those traits, a lot of leaders that somehow had a Dacian connotation, even the revolters, the farmers that changed history. We have some farmers that created a revolution, and he was called Horia Rex Dacia, Horia the King of Dacia.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have another one that is called Ion the Jet. So this constant name of Jet and Goat are constantly popping up in Romania for a pretty long time now. And it's the same even with the writers. When they mention, some of them always mention both things, like they mean the same thing, in the same book. Like it's okay to use the same word. It's okay to use two words for the same...
For the same people, yeah.
For the same people,
yeah. Well, exactly. We have the thing of like the, you know, the Druids and the versus the Celts. You know, there are things like that in other parts of the world too, where we see that they're trying to connect it with something. You know, if you can impose a new name on it that means something more of a negative connotation in a different language, it's obvious that they do that for purposes of control and domineering and basically trying to, in attempt to, you know, eradicate, you know, their history. So why would you think they would do that? Let's talk about some of the things that have been found in what today then is Romania, but in Dacia, around the Carpathian Mountains. There's so many interesting sites. And so many interesting finds. Where should we begin?
I have no idea on that topic. I mean, that's such a complex topic. And even to say that one discovery is more amazing than the other, it's impossible to do, because there are hundreds and hundreds of sites, and they have not been fully researched. I don't know if I should give a percentage, but I could easily say that just a few percent, a very small size of Romania has been researched. And almost all the research has been done has given just amazing results. One of the most amazing sites has to be probably Sarmi Sagetuza. From the point of view of what they found.
Right, yeah.
When they did the research. Sarmi Sagetuza on Wikipedia, you will find that it's a duchy on capital, a military capital, which is totally not accurate, because that whole place of Sarmi Sagetuza was not any type of fortress or a capital, a military capital. It was their spiritual center. When they found that place, the walls, they were not the way they are today. And when they renovated, when they changed the walls were very low, were like 120 meters. So they were just above your stomach, you know, it's pretty low for a wall for a fortress.
Right.
But, yeah. During the communist time, when they changed the way everything looked there, they changed some things there. They destroyed the site, actually, from an archaeological point of view. They made a very poor reconstruction. They used the stones from the river. When the Dutch never used stone, they didn't use that type of material. They used only granite and real rock, you know.
Right.
Real.
Yeah.
So they didn't do a good job in restoring that place.
Is that what we see today if we look at images of Sarmi Sagetuza today?
What we see today is the center of that place. It's one of those terraces. They uncovered about 12 terraces, but... during the time of their research, they found almost 250 terraces in that place. And it's huge. It's about 38,000 hectares, which is a lot.
Yeah.
It's really a lot. And what is also very peculiar about that subject is that in a few years back, an actor that was working as a minister of culture in 2011 or 10, he wanted to uncover Sarmi Sagetuza and reveal what's under Sarmi Sagetuza, because they've been talking about there is a city the size of Bucharest under Sarmi Sagetuza. And immediately after that, he was fired. And a few years back, he actually gave this news to a journalist. So... So it's very weird what they are trying to hide over there and why they have not done their research, you know, the way they should.
Yeah, more work needs to be done.
More research, more archaeological digging. And also, when you talk about archaeological digging in Sarmi Sagetuza, it's only like one part of Romania, one county, one city, actually, one... university is totally controlling the whole project of the digging. And they've been doing that for 70-something years.
Right.
Oh. And that's weird because you have so many other scientists that would like to research that place. They would want to have access to that place, but they're not allowed because they have some kind of monopoly over that site.
Are they claiming that it needs to be protected as they do in certain sites in Sweden, so they just won't dig it up or do anything with it?
No, they are blaming sometimes on the budget. The budget is always very low when it comes to Dacian archaeology. It's almost minimalistic. I mean, in 25 years, they have not done anything almost. I could say everything has been done so minimalistic, and it's taken them almost 24 years to protect the site you see over there. And right now, it is protected. It's guarded for the first time in 24 years, I think. Last year, they started with this. So it's very weird they left like that. Because this has been the main center for grave robbers, or I don't know
what
to call them.
Yeah.
People that know about the artifacts ahead, they have maps over the place. They know exactly where to look, and somehow they must be connected with the archaeological information in the last 70 years that this university has been researching, because they were just them there.
So they know certain things, almost like they've done it in an attempt to get more people to destroy some of the things that are there, like hide the evidence, get rid of it, whatever, we don't bother with it, just get rid of it, right?
They are exporting, they are selling everything on black market.
Exactly.
From 2001 to 2008, we had something that is called the treasure police. A treasure police is supposed to buy back all types of artifacts that they found that are from Romania, that they found around the world. In that 8 years or 7 years, they spent €8 million of stuff taken from Sani Sajatuza.
Wow. Yeah.
€8 million. But they did not spend that on the site.
Interesting.
They spent it on the New York auction house to buy back the bracelet, the Dacian bracelet that you have seen. There have been many Dacian bracelets.
Yeah.
And not only that, what is also weird, that when they were found, they were trying to blame that the artifacts are fake, that they're not real, so the people that are found guilty for taking the artifacts, they so they can get away. So all these type of weird things have been going on. Even before, directly after the revolution, that place in 89 was infested with foreign cars, jeeps, and equipment, all types of equipment around the villages of Sarmi Sajatuza. And almost for years, the people there in the village, even if you go today and ask them, they would tell you stories about how many foreign cars were seen in the mountains, which also means that exactly when he passed away, they knew exactly what to do, where to go, what to find. Archaeological information that was probably sold before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because many times these people would find stuff maybe and they would bury it back. They would not take it out. But there was some maybe recorded it somewhere in a page or in a document. And it's a very strange thing to see that they didn't want to, they were somehow forced to protect it now. But to see them that they do not care at all about our history and our past, it's really, really upsetting.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible to see that being ripped out in that way from under your feet, and knowing too that, you know, there's so much rich history there. I think, you know, we talked about this before as well, but there seems to be an attempt here almost to go for as many ancient European cultures as possible, and really doing the utmost of, you know, cover them up, help to destroy them, not bring attention to them, not do the good work on them, etc. I think what we have here, in this case, not only with the naming itself, of so many different names on them, but I think we have some kind of a very early European civilization, a proto-European civilization, and not the least, I guess we could talk a little bit about that now, but we have the Tartarian, if that's how you pronounce it, Tartarian tablets, for example.
Tartaria tablets, yeah.
Tell us about those, because those go way back, you know.
The Tartaria tablets are the tablets that were found, I think, in the late 60s, if I remember right. And they contain three alphabets. They contain the Sumerian alphabet, the Greek alphabet, and an unknown alphabet. It was, in 61 it was found. And it was also interesting that I believe now when they created this new freeway that goes from middle of center of Romania to the west of Romania, they came upon the Tartaria site, I think. Yes, they did. I can see it here on the map.
Right.
They some on this road that goes from the center to the west of Romania, they probably destroyed more than 20-30 sites. And some of them were destroyed deliberately because you could see how the road went. You can actually see it. And there were all types of discoveries here. I mean, they were Roman settlement, Dacian, and even older, even Neolithic settlements from Cucuten time, and it's very, very interesting to see how they handle things when it comes to the history and how.
Yeah.
Because just this year, for example, just close to Sarmi Segetuza Regia, the place we talked before, there is another Sarmi Segetuza. It's called Sarmi Segetuza Ulpia Traiana. And this one is a, they call it a Roman gladiator scene. What do you call it?
Yeah, like a Colosseum.
Yeah.
Right.
Gladiator Colosseum.
Yeah.
And for this, they have found somehow 5 million euro to invest in this. And when it comes to having, for example, a Dacian statue, we do not have Dacian statues in Romania. We have some that were created now. I mean, we have one or two, but we don't have enough, you know what I mean? We have more Roman statues than we have Dacian, for example.
Same thing as Sweden. We have Greek and Roman statues, but hardly any of our own Norse folk, you know?
That is weird. That is weird.
It's horrible, you know? So I get what you're saying. I see a very interesting resemblance, you know, between what has happened in Romania and what has happened in Sweden too. We even, of course, have the Getae or the Geti or the Goth connection here as well, I believe.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very amazing connection because there is so much thing to say on that subject. there have been so many writers before even the Romanian research started in the 17th century. There have been a lot of writers that have been pointing out clearly that the Goths and the Jets are one and the same. There's no difference between the Getae and the Goths.
Yeah.
You have to take in consideration that the Getae were not just one kind of Getae. There were many types of Getae. For example, the one close east of Romania, that go all the way to Kurdistan and Iran, that part, those were the Massa Getae. That's where Queen Tomiris ruled. But then you have the Tira Getae that lived on the Tiras River. Then you have Samo Getae that were called the ones above Romania, above north of Romania, the Russians. So it's all connected somehow.
Yeah.
And I will have to go a little back in time and start to talk about Marianne Gibutash again, because
sure, yeah.
She created an amazing research that was consciously ignored, because the her research would have connected the past with the Pelasgian, with what happened with the Hyperborean and the whole story. The whole story that doesn't seem to fit, that there is a missing time from the Cucuten to, let's say, I don't know, 1500 BC, 2000 BC in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cucuten right. goes 5500 BC to 3500 BC. So after Cucuten, we have space there that we don't know. And that's when probably most of those legends were created, the legend of the Greeks, that period of time. But if we go even ahead of time, we don't even know what happened before the year 1000. I mean, that period of time from, let's say, 500 AD to from Theodoric the Great. That's how it's called, right?
Yeah, Theodoric, yeah.
From his time, we know very little about our history.
Yeah.
I jumped again from Maria Gimbutas to this. But what I wanted to say about Maria Gimbutas, that her research was condemned, that it was promoting the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that is ridiculous because you all know who sponsored the feminist movement.
Sure, sure. Well, there was, because it wasn't the right feminist agenda behind that, right? That's why.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they wanted to hide this because it would connect the Pelasgian. I am more than sure that this is, it has to do with the Pelasgian and with the legends, with the Hyperborean and the story.
Let me also just ask you there about Gambutas there, because she talked about, I think, one of the important things here, if you look at someone like Tumeria as well, you kind of realize that, very powerful, female figure, right? I think that, yeah, and we can see this in more ancient pagan culture in Europe, that there was a very strong cooperation between men and women. It wasn't this division.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the items why I think that they've, you know, kind of destroyed her work as well, because it didn't, as you say, it didn't point out the division of feminism that it's later had created. It just basically pointed out that when the religion, when the Abrahamic religions came in, that's when this division started to occur, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It could be absolutely like that. Another thing about her work is that one of the most amazing mythologists of all time really confirmed her work. And that, to me, is the best clue you can ever find. I mean, Joseph Campbell confirmed Maria Gimbutas' work. I mean, conferred it through his knowledge of mythology. And that is something amazing. Because he's one of the greatest giants we have in mythology.
Sure, yeah.
So, even confirming that something about the Aryans coming from the Carpathian Mountain, I think it was Joseph Campbell that confirmed that.
Mm-hmm, right.
But like I said, people get all excited about words. If you say Aryan, or if you say whatever you say, you know, they get upset about words. But
sure.
Words are just like a word game. A word game, and we do not know all the words. I mean, we do not know the past. And for that, we cannot be upset if somebody's... Because even the story of the Aryans, I'm not that much into it. I do not have that much knowledge. But to see how people react as soon as you start to mention this, this is what is so weird about it.
Sure, yeah.
Because it was just a period in time when those people called themselves Aryans, but then they changed the name to something else, and they're still here. It's like...
Sure, yeah.
They had to change the name. Like for example, the story of the Goths. If we go into the story of the Goths, Eric, I have seen some research that shows that the Goths do date to something like 200 BC. But they do not have any real confirmation of the name of the gods. There were a lot of question marks in some of the links I sent you. It was from some university in UK.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only one I found that went behind 200 AD.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because in 212, Caracalla, the Roman emperor, kills his brother Geta. And after that, he forbids the name of Getae or Geta, any type of G-E-T would make you lose your head. So during that time, he executed 20,000 people that used this name after that. And sometime in 237 or 47, that's when the first time the name of God appeared. And this is what is so peculiar about this research, because they cannot say they have not heard about this version. I mean, the gods could not pop up in history in 247 perfectly prepared for battle.
No, of course not.
What were they doing all this time? Training for the Romans?
Right.
You know what I mean? It must be some kind of continuity. This whole story, it's only about that. Has to be some kind of continuity. And I don't know. It's like the researchers have to apply more that detective work than the academic work.
Yeah. If you only stare so blind at the, you know, some of the approved sources, you're not going to get the whole story. You're not going to get the full version, you know?
Absolutely. And imagine yourself that we have no knowledge of what our neighbor countries have for books.
Yeah.
Because you see, all the countries of Europe are so split up that we don't know, for example, what the people behind the Black Sea are saying about the Goths.
Right. Yeah.
Or about the Germans, or about the Romans, or what happened, because they all had their own opinion. And for the Western researcher just to approve the Roman version of things, I think it's ridiculous.
I know, it's the worst thing they could do, at least if they're interested in their own history, specifically the Germanic people, and I would include the Thracian, the Getae, the Duchy people in that too. I think it's a very, because, I mean, think about the we have not only the migration age of, 500 to 600, we have, I think, several migrations taking place before that. I think we have, we did have a movement of these different population in a very organic way. They did travel to different areas, and they did, you know, bring their names with them. It slowly changed over time. But I think that the relationship between a lot of these different tribes is much closer than we perceive today. It's not so isolated that we think that it is today, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not.
The Getae and the Goths, what about the possibility that, you know, we're talking about the same people here, basically? As you said, there's a number of people that have advocated those particular theories, why some say, oh, no, it's absolutely ridiculous, right? But
even if we take the Roman literature, I think they have ignored just the literature that got it right. Because you can find the same version even in some Rome. Not that many, but there is still some. If we take in consideration the writings of all the writings, all the Roman writings on the Dacian subject and the Thracian subject, some researchers have come up with a number between 220 and 280 books have disappeared. And how they have found out this number is, it's very simple. It's by other people quoting their books.
Mm-hmm.
Their books,
right.
And other books. And that's how they have found out about book that they don't have anymore.
Right.
So there are still a lot of information out there. It's just that people have to get interested in this type of subject and to dare to look for different information and different direction, and there is a clear continuity here. And I don't know if I have explained myself enough, because it's a very complex story, and even though I've prepared myself, I was not able to explain the way I wanted the story. Maybe you could ask me something that you would think we'd have to talk about.
Yeah, well, exactly. What is important to know, as you say, there's, you know, tons of different angles to this, and in a little bit we're gonna take a break here. But what I want to get into more is I want to definitely talk about the Rosia Montana, right? There's a very important site about the different networks, the gold story here too. I think we need to talk about Zalmoxis a little bit. The first lawgiver of the Jitai. That's a very interesting story, but just before we wrap up the first segment here, Octavian, obviously we're going to include a bunch of links that you've sent to me on the program page that I urge people to look more at. But is there anything in specific now you're thinking about that we just should briefly talk about before we take a break? What do you think? Anything major?
Well, yeah, the major thing that this war, the Daco-Roman War, was the war of the war between spiritual civilization and the most materialistic civilization at that time, the Roman Empire. The only empire that, I mean, they might give the barbarians that name, that they are the barbarians, but to all extent, everything the Roman did was the depiction of barbarianism. Because they attacked the innocent people and took them from their home. I mean, they were not pacifists in any way. And still, I cannot feel pity for the conqueror. It's just... I can't.
No, of course not, and you shouldn't. You know, I guess, just to reemphasize one point about Zarme Jetetuza, it's like this was a spiritual center, as you said. It was not a... You know, they had
absolutely had
water pipes. They had paved roads. It was very actually later, right, that they actually developed into a more warring type of people because they had to react from the threat of the Romans, I believe, right?
Probably, but I don't think it was ever used as a fortress or anything like that.
Sure.
Because the walls, when they found the walls in late 60s, when they remodeled that place. The walls, like I said, were very low. It was just 1 meter. And they took some stones and made it 2 meters high. And they were very opened, those places. So it means that the whole place of 250 terraces was some kind of spiritual center. And, of course, if it goes underground, then it was a whole city. It was a whole city underground. And it is a whole city underground.
Now, what do we know about those... But is that a very large cover-up area, or is there any like research out there about the underground area?
Well, if we take in consideration, in 2008, the BBC came to Romania to film their documentary, veneration documentary, Rome Lost Empire or something. They came to Sarmiento Jetetuza and... of course, they invited one of the archaeologists that is pro-Roman, and he was speaking on the site of Sarmiento Jetetuza that are bad about Dacians on their site there. But what they did when they came there, they took picture with something called a LIDAR. It's called light detection... sensor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Am I saying it right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Some very advanced military equipment for scanning underground chambers.
Yeah, it's a LIDAR, right? It's a remote sensor.
LIDAR, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
LIDAR.
Right.
So they have not showed us the results, and for the Romanian government to let a foreign entity take picture of something like that. And then not even ask or not even telling us what is going on, or probably they collaborate, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm, right.
But it's very strange. It's very strange. And actually, there are many types of places like that have some weird stories to it, weird connotation or weird events and even paranormal places and... Like I said, the Carpathian Mountains are very, very strange and mystic and beautiful mountains. There's a lot of history in those mountains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of megaliths in the mountains too. A lot of sculptures in the bedrock, in the mountains. A lot of faces created. I don't know exactly the number, but there's at least 40, 50 sculptures in the mountain. In the late 60s, a famous archaeologist called Daniel Rousseau came to Romania because he was investigating Marcahuasi, the stone forest of Peru. Because he found here something similar, and he discovered in other countries too. There was about 5 countries in the world that he was researching in. And he was talking about this ancient civilization from 40,000 years ago. There's actually a really cool documentary on Marcahuasi on Daniel Rousseau about this on UFO TV, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting.
So we can put up a link there.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, just quickly here, we do have the so-called Sphinx as well in the same. It's in the Buchegi Mountains. It's a part of southern Carpathians, I believe. And I mean, there's so many of these kinds of, you know, places here, which is just, you know, worth noticing. But I guess one last point here. Let's go back here to one thing, and then we'll take a break here. But you talked about basically that you have also a feeling that this is ultimately this is about a long-standing, you know, war between, you know, those people are seeking to control and dominate. They one of the methods that they've applied is not only warfare itself, but actually emphasizing cultural erosion, right? To get us stuck in materialism, a kind of a non-spiritual view of things. And I think that what we're talking about here is kind of a proto, an early European civilization that has that is rooted in this area that we're talking about. That could be a key to a lot of things, actually. A lot of different,
a different
view in terms of you know, how far back we, you know, we go, but also what was possible, both technology, but also spiritual, right? So I just want to kind of re-emphasize that point and see if there's anything else you want to mention about that. Why it's important to look at this kind of stuff is because it is relevant to the continuation of the cultural erosion that we're seeing today, correct?
Absolutely. It's very, very important because if you just look at all societies around the world have changed in the last 30 years. Everybody can agree upon that thing. But in what direction they have changed? I mean, Is this the direction we want to see our children live in? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the concept, even the concept of the ancestors really explains that because we are not, for example, here in Sweden, and in other proper countries, that thing when a person gets old, what do you do with him? That concept of what do we do with our ancestors, even the ones that are still living, because it's the same thing, it's the same concept. It's, I mean, if we are mistreating the one alive today, of course you're going to mistreat the past too.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, we're not even taking care of our elders here. So how are we going to, you see, because this has to change here too.
I agree.
That concept of I think that was the biggest manipulation here in Sweden for the Swedish people. I think it was that concept of, because it was double standard. They were saying you have to be independent. Be independent, but don't stand out too much. Mm-hmm. You said you want me to be independent. Maybe I will stand out a little. What?
Yeah.
That notion of they're saying something, but they don't really mean it. Not even that. So do you really want me to be independent, or you just want me to be half independent?
Yeah, well, be independent, but continue to pay the highest taxes in the world, right? So
So that concept of being independent makes probably the child want to leave the home at 18, for example, or even early if he can, right?
Yeah.
But it's also the question, what happens after that, after you leave your parents? I mean, do you break the contact with your parents? I mean, that notion has to be understood that is one of the reasons that society has changed because we have been forgetting our elders. And this is connected to remembering the past. It's very connected.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's how we treat the elders. It's how we treat our ancestors. It's very connected. And in a sense, I don't think our ancestors really want that much from us. I mean, something really amazing. No. I mean, the only thing they're really suffering from, our ancestors, is that simple thing that we don't remember them.
Yeah, we don't recognize them. We don't venerate them. No.
Not even venerate. I don't know if lighting a candle would be a veneration. If you light a candle for your ancestor once a year, if that would fit in the category of veneration, I don't know. It's more like an attention.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's just one candle. It's not a big deal. I mean, it's not the whole world.
Yeah. So and even that we don't do. You know, it's sad. It's very sad.
Yeah, even that, because it's a simple thing, and we are not even doing that.
And that's why we're selling out, right? We don't understand, first of all, what they went through to survive and to give us the things that we are able to have today. And without this understanding and recognition of our past in this way, we don't appreciate it. In other words, we are willing to sell it out for nothing or for materialism or for, you know, whatever. It's right. It's about that idea of creating an individual that are so detached from their own people and their own culture that they basically end up being a very, very easily manageable individual, you know, in this new world order of ours towards globalism. That's ultimately what this is about, right? And trying to work against that and that destruction we see, you know,
to create a nation of robots. I mean,
sure, yeah.
To have people that have no feelings, that can walk past another human being that is suffering and not do anything about it. I mean, even the concept of Christianity has been bashed out of its existence, but it seems that it's very weird that notion that many researchers have been pointing out of turning the other cheek, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is not Christianity. That is the manipulation of Christianity. That is what they introduced into it, because when you look back in our Romanian history, not the official version, but the stolen version, you will find that all the Romanians were warriors. They were really fighting. If they're not fighting, if they're not handling an arm, they were being a priest. They were in a church.
Mm-hmm.
Which also means that everybody was a warrior. If we take an example of the Aromanians that live in the Ottoman Empire, they were the only one that were carrying an arm in the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm, right.
And they had a tattoo on their forehead, a cross on their forehead. And they were the only one that were carrying arms. And there's a lot of stories in Romania, not talking about big events, like, because the big events they were not able to erase. But the smaller events, the more hidden events, smaller numbers, but very impressive events, they have been erasing. And it all points out that concept that is going on now in the United States. For example, the concept of carrying a gun. You know, they are trying to remove the guns from the Americans.
Yeah, Second Amendment. Yeah.
Second Amendment and all that. How come in Europe just one country has the guns?
Yeah, Switzerland.
Yes. How come they are so well prepared?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and we don't know jack shit, and they're like, "Wow, come and get me."
Yeah, I know.
It's weird, but they are the army of the Vatican.
Yeah, that's correct.
So that's how this whole thing started for them. Anyway,
let's talk a little bit more about that and the Vatican and the war here, of course, on the Dutch and people. But yeah, we'll take a short break here then, Octavian. And again, I reference people to many of the links that we have up and available here. But we'll pick up this after the break. So stay with us, everybody, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're just kind of getting started here, but as we continue and pick up in the next hour, we'll speak more about Russia, Montana, and the gold extraction that has been occurring there. We speak about Zamolxis, the first legislator of the Jetai. We also talk about some of the other prominent and influential figures in the history of Romania. We begin with Ceausescu of more modern times, but then we go back into history and talk about the lies surrounding Vlad the Impaler. That's right, Legend of Dracula and the Order of the Dragon, these amazing deeds, really, of Vlad Tepes and his fight against the Ottoman Empire, the Turks. We try to make people understand not only why he has been so demonized historically, but also why he did what he did in order to defend and protect his people and ultimately Europe from the hordes of those seeking to conquer Europe in the name of Islam. This is a very interesting story of Romania and so many things we don't know about this. So I hope you stay with us as we continue at redicemembers.com. You can go there to sign up and tune in if you haven't already. Of course, the first hour that we do is always for free. Sometimes we do both for free. We spare you from commercial interruptions in the program and blinking banners on our website. So if you like what we do and want to hear more, please sign up and, of course, get full access to our archives. We have tons of fascinating shows for you to discover and learn more about, not only important topics, but also what we find to be interesting. The website redicemembers.com has all the information for you. All right, well, thank you for staying with us. We have, of course, more coming up here in just a few days. Next is Radio 314. You can see a full list of our upcoming guests on the website. Stay tuned to those for all the latest. But we'll go right into the second hour here after the break with Octavian. So stay with us for more on the stolen history of Romania.